I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Best-selling author Jennifer Weiner has struggled with her weight during much of her life, and many of the characters in her novels have shared her battles with body image. She also had to battle publishers who didn't think readers would identify with plus-size women. She's written more than 10 books, including Good in Bed, In Her Shoes, and most recently, The Next Best Thing. As the mother of two young daughters, Weiner has been thinking about the messages she received growing up when she was known as the fat girl. She's also thinking how to raise self-confident girls in our body-conscious culture when women and girls can get obsessed with things like thigh gaps, thinking they should look like models who are so thin their upper thighs don't touch. Jennifer Weiner is the keynote speaker tomorrow at the Renfrew Center Foundation's Eating Disorder Conference, and she joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. And Jennifer Weiner, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. One thing I should say is I didn't actually struggle with my weight for many years. I think I struggled with it from about like 13 to about 23, then I gave up.
Important to know.
Then I was just like, you know, I think there's more important things for me to be struggling with, and the world can just deal with it or not. So
I'm so used to talking to you about your novels
I
and
know.
Your characters, and Here we are talking to you about you. Is that different for you, instead of talking about your characters, to talk about yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, fiction gives you this lovely layer of plausible deniability where, you know, people can be like, so that, like, girl who grew up, like, shopping at Lane Bryant and, like, crying because nobody wanted to, like, sit with her on the bus. And I'd be like, I made that up. That has, please. Look at me now. But no, it's, you know, there's a reason I've done fiction all these years. But now it's like I've been writing more essays. And I think, like, even with Twitter, like, even, you know, you can be very honest in 140 characters. So, yeah.
Do you think your characters, though, have, not your 140 characters, but your actual characters, do you think they have taught you things about yourself?
Well, that's the thing. As you know, I'm giving the keynote speech at the Renfrew Center's big conference tomorrow, and I was thinking about confidence and self-esteem and the idea of sort of act as if or fake it till you make it.
Right.
And I would always write these characters who got the happy ending and who ended up really feeling okay about, like, who they were and where they were in the world. And even if I wasn't feeling that way myself, like, I remember writing Good in Bed when I was in my 20s, you know, hadn't met the guy, hadn't quite figured a lot of it out yet. But I'm like, you know, I'm going to give this girl a happy ending. I'm going to give her everything I hope for. And maybe it'll come true. And maybe this book will be sort of like a roadmap. And if it doesn't, at least I'll have had the, you know, the personal joy of, like, creating somebody who was kind of like me and giving her everything I wanted.
It's so interesting because of the numbers of best-selling books that you've written. But early on, publishers would say to you, you know, who wants to read about an overweight character?
That was a
pretty typical response.
That was the thing. You know, and I should say, like, there were publishers who got it. There were agents who got it. Bridget Jones' Diary had come out by the time I was trying to sell Good in Bed. And so, but Bridget Jones was sort of like fretting about, like, maybe an extra 10 pounds. And that was okay. Like, you could have sort of weight concerns within the range of normal weight. But writing a character who was a size 16 who wasn't going to become thin by the end of the book, like, that was problematic. And I think that people wondered, like, do people want to read this kind of story? Because I think there was the attitude that, like, we don't turn on the TV to see people who look like us. We don't go to the movies to see people who look like us. Are we going to want to read a book about somebody who looks the way I do or you do or my sister does or my mom does? And it turns out people did, which was very, very refreshing and very heartening. But yeah, I definitely had the first agent I was dealing with, I ended up not working with her because she said, you know, this is a lonely, pathetic fat girl, and no one wants to read a story about a lonely, pathetic fat girl. And how about you just make her not fat? Like, I could have the lonely, pathetic part, just not the fat, you know?
But and you stuck to your guns.
Yeah, I did. I basically said, like, if she's not dealing with, like, weight as, like, a major issue and a major sort of signifier of everything else that's going on in her world and in the culture, she's Bridget Jones with a bat mitzvah. And I didn't want to write that book.
But what's so interesting is, as we all know, this is a country where a lot of people struggle with their weight.
It's so interesting because on the one hand, we know that more and more people are overweight, obese, whatever, wearing plus sizes, however you want to put it. And yet the standards of beauty are becoming narrower and narrower and more punitive. And you look at the way that women are held up for ridicule for example, not losing the baby weight fast enough. Like, it used to be like, you got a break, okay? You just had a baby. Like, the world was going to leave you alone for at least a couple months. Like, just be a mom. Be with your baby. Jiggle. Be happy. But, like, no mas. Like, you can't jiggle in public anymore. And it feels like you turn on reality TV and the women you see don't look real.
No. Well, that's real.
That's reality TV. But just, I feel as though any woman who sort of dares to show her face in public had better be thin and had better be young, attractive, long, straight, shiny hair, you know, skinny legs, skinny hips, big rack, pretty face, small, regular features. Like, it's become very flattening. Almost. And I feel like when I was a kid, like, I mean, certainly there were beauty standards. There was Charlie's Angels. There were all kinds of, like, people you could never hope to look like. But I just feel like now it's gotten so much worse and so much more pervasive, where everything you see and every message you get is sort of telling you you're not good enough.
Well, I sometimes wonder whether that's technology driven. And by that, I mean, because you can do something to your body, then you should do something to your body.
Yeah, like the fact that these options exist means that we should all be utilizing them. And another facet of technology, I think, are things like Facebook, where I feel that people, this is just my theory, it's not based on anything other than spending a lot of time on social media, but I think that people feel compelled to present perfected versions of themselves, where it's not you on Facebook, it is the avatar of you, it's you at your best possible self, it's only the highlights, it's only the happy moments in your life, it's only your kids looking great and not the time your kid got sent home from school for having lice, or not the fight you had with your husband. It's just it's perfected. And if all we're seeing are sort of the edited, filtered, polished, burnished, best segments of what everybody has to present, like, what does that tell us when we're just in there slugging and living our life day to day?
I was struggling with language in terms of even just writing on my introduction, how to talk to you. Mm-hmm. I know you have used the F word.
The F word, yeah.
And I don't like euphemisms. You know, I like to say what things are. And there's fat, there's large, there's overweight, there's plus size. Do you care? Is there a word that you like out of that list?
Oh, God. No, I don't like any of them. And I know that there's sort of a, like, movement to, like, reclaim the word fat the way that people in the gay community have reclaimed the word queer. I don't know. I just, to me, it's always a word that sounds derogatory. Bigger. I don't know. Bigger than. I'm not sure, because, like, who am I bigger than? I mean, like, I'm kind of normalish if you look at, like, the range of sizes that women are wearing in this country. But I don't know. I'm not in love with fat. I mean, I wrote a whole essay for Allure about the time my, like, daughter came home and called another girl fat. And I was just like, because I'd been ready for her to be called that. Like, I'd been bracing myself. Like, since the day I found out I was having a daughter, I was going to be like, oh, my God. Like, is she going to grow up being the big girl? And how will I handle that? And what will I tell her? And how do I, you know, like, downloading all those It Gets Better videos, like, to show her at age two or whatever. But just thinking and thinking and thinking about, like, what, how do I protect, you know, this fragile flower that I have given birth to? And little do I know that she's going to be the mean girl, that she's going to be the one coming home being like, and she's fat. And, like, just, ugh, I felt that, like, devastation so clearly. I'm like, you don't know what that word does to people.
Ugh. And part of that essay was, you and she going to her room and you struggling with, do I give her the fiction? Do I give her the, you know, the fictional answer? Do I give her the realistic answer?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do I talk to her about the way I wish the world was, or do I tell her about the way the world really is? And, you know, that we don't judge people because of how they look. That's not how you assess somebody's worth in the world. But that's what the world does.
Yeah.
And she knows it. I mean, and at 9, she knew it, and she probably knew it at 5 or 6.
But in this essay, that I guess it was Allure, I've been reading so many different things about you and you.
I've been busy.
You've been busy.
I've been busy.
But you do say, and you use the word fat to describe, I mean, as you said, growing up.
Yeah, I was, well, that was the thing. That was the hell of it. My parents named me Jennifer. They thought they were being like super duper original. They were on an army base. I can't really fault them. There weren't a lot of babies being born. And by the time they got back to civilization, they discovered that like every other girl born in 1970 was named Jennifer. So I became the fat one.
The fat Jennifer.
Yeah. You know, well, that wasn't until I was like 14 or 15. And it was like my parents sent me to Israel for the summer. And I was with all of these like awful, snotty, mean kids, mean girls, you know, who were just like, oh, not the fat Jennifer, the other, the cool Jennifer. But yeah, it was, I don't know. It's like I like to say that like having had a not so great childhood sort of gave me character and gave me lots of stories to tell. But then when I had daughters, it was like, I will lay down my life to prevent them from going through what I went through. Like and if any kid makes them feel the way that those kids made me feel, I will find them and tear their faces off. Like that very, not that I'm actually, you know, advocating face tearing, but I think that there's something very primal about being a mother and wanting to keep your daughters safe and knowing how the world can hurt them.
So you're not going to do that to my daughter, right?
Well, right, exactly. And it's like I want them to grow up believing that they have worth no matter how they look. I want them to grow up knowing that worth depends on character and actions and belief, not appearance. But what can you do? It's like they're all born with that Disney princess chip, you know, and...
But what's interesting is you write about growing up and your mom was a big woman.
Yep.
I mean, she seemed to, you know, revel in her body.
Yeah.
You even say your dad, you know,
loved her body
and to the point where the kids would sort of leave the room because
we would
a little
frequently
bit
of- leave the room. It was too much love. But yeah, you know, that was sort of my secret weapon. And that's something that I've been determined to model for my own children is like I had a mom who was and is a full-figured, plus-size, larger, whatever woman who just flat-out refused to act ashamed.
Right.
And she would swim for a mile every day. She'd put on her bathing suit. She'd get in the water. She'd get dressed up and go to parties. She'd ride her bike. She'd be out in the world. And I never saw her diet. And I never saw her complain about it or like, oh, I was so bad last night or, oh, my fat pants or like any of that. Like I did not grow up with that language in my ears. And that was so important. I mean, because as much as I suffered, like imagine if I'd been one of these kids whose mom put her on a diet,
right,
you know,
or was watching what she was eating all the time.
Or was constantly, you know, weighing,
do you really
and measuring.
Need that second helping,
exactly,
those kinds of questions.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, I, you know, I was very lucky in a way. And I hope that I've managed to sort of take what was great about my mom and use it with my daughters.
Well, Jennifer Weiner, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, as I said, she's been on the show a number of times talking about her many, many novels. And now we're talking about her and herself and her kids and being a woman and taking calls at 1-888. That kind of covers it.
That's pretty much leaves nothing, leaves no stone unturned.
1-888-477-9499. Give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you living with relentless pain? St. Mary offers a new way to help. The Rapid Recovery Program for Knee and Hip Replacements, designed to promote faster recovery, with patients walking just hours after surgery. St. Mary offers custom-fit joints to help promote a pain-free life. Details at stmaryhealthcare.org/joints. St. Mary Medical Center in Langhorne, supporting WHYY. It's your health. Expect more.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, for the first time, Dearborn, Michigan, with one of the highest concentrations of Arab Americans in the U.S., has elected a majority Arab American city council. We'll speak with one of the newly elected councilors. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Wincroft School in Pottstown provides an independent education for students ages 3 years old through 8th grade. Wincroft offers a rigorous core curriculum complemented by community service projects, foreign language, technology, and arts. The school endeavors to provide a nurturing setting, fostering creativity, a love of learning, personal integrity, determination, and respect for others. Their open house is Sunday, November 10th at 1 p.m. Details at wincroft.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Jennifer Weiner. So do you like your body? A majority of women don't. In fact, a new study found that only 12% of women over the age of 50 were happy with their size. Body image is so prevalent these days and concerns about body image that New York City has actually launched a public health campaign. It's the I'm Beautiful the Way I Am campaign to boost young girls' self-esteem. That's what we're talking about today on Radio Times. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. But Jennifer, it's interesting because you had a mom who clearly was happy with the way she looks mm-hmm. and looked. This was obviously a very powerful model for you growing yeah. up. And yet those images, those messages from the outside yeah. permeated.
Well,
that's
the thing. I mean, this New York campaign, the, you know, you're beautiful the way you are, like, I think that we can tell girls that as explicitly as we want to, but I think the messages that they're getting are much more subtle and much more sophisticated. And it's like, I don't know what you do about it, because mm-hmm. I feel like I've taken all of the steps you're supposed to, you know, like when People Magazine does the like half their size issue, like I don't have that in the house because I don't want my daughters to believe that, you know, that there are women who only matter when they've like lost an entire person's worth of weight, you know. But I feel like I don't know. I feel like it's almost like those Just Say No campaigns. Mm. Like it's like kids rolled their eyes at them because it was sort of like obvious and dumb. Like, oh, feel great about yourself. Yeah, okay, grandma, I'll do that. When I think like every time they turn on the TV, every time they're on the internet, even the pop stars now, like I think, and that's like the most dismaying thing is like, even women whose bodies don't necessarily have anything to do with their work are all like skinny minis. Mm. And it's like there's just no range. There's like, there's so few people. And then like when you get a Melissa McCarthy and it's like, oh, thank God, Melissa McCarthy. But Melissa McCarthy is one person and she can't be all things to all people. And like she's getting a lot of flack right now. She's on the cover of Elle and everybody's like, oh, fantastic. Elle is finally having a plus size woman. But she's in this giant coat. So basically what? You see her face and her ankles. And then everybody's like, well, why are they covering her up? Why are they ashamed? Mm-hmm. And Melissa McCarthy is like, well, actually, I was the one who picked that coat out. And I, you know, if you're going to be mad at anybody, don't be mad at Elle, be mad at me. But it's like even the women who are delivering, quote unquote, the right message, it's not going to be right enough for some people. And they're just like one voice in like the howling wilderness of like, get thin, get thin, get thin.
I've seen pictures of plus size models and they come in all different sizes,
right.
But so many of them, I mean, they just look like regular people. They
don't. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, I think like what we call like plus size models are what, like size 12? And the
something
average
like
woman
that.
In America wears like a 14. So it's like, what is going on in our world where, and then like size zero. Okay. What is size zero? And then size double zero. It's like, so you wear nothing? Like you're the size of nothing? I mean, what? It's just like, you know, and I get that some of it's vanity sizing and like, I know, like it feels fantastic when you can put on something that's a size smaller than you normally wear and you buy it even if it doesn't look good because it's like, oh, but look what size it is. But it's like, you know, it's because you know that there are women in decision-making positions and you just want to shake them and be like, don't any of you guys have daughters or sisters or moms or friends or anyone who doesn't fit that mold? And like, what are you telling them?
As you said at the top of the show, which is by the time you got to your mid 20s or so, you felt okay about
yeah,
the way
I was over it. I mean, it was like,
was it an epiphany or was it just over time? You just said,
was,
you know, this is who I am.
It was over time. I mean, I wish that I could say that there was one like great shining moment where the scales fell from my eyes and I was just like, but you know, it's like, I heard Margaret Cho once describe like trying to achieve lasting weight loss is like trying to hold a basketball underwater. It can be done, but it takes so much. And then I was reading yesterday the story about the weight loss registry where Kelly Brownell, who's a guy at Yale, has been following people who've lost large amounts of weight and kept it off for years and years and years. The New York Times Sunday Magazine did a story about like a day in the life of a woman who had lost 135 pounds and kept it off. She works out 2 hours a day, woman in her 60s. In her 60s, working out 2 hours a day, she counts every calorie that goes in her mouth. She measures her food. She weighs her food. The quote was, "I'm never not thinking about it." And so what I said to myself, and I was, you know, 23, 24, 25, and it's like, you know, when you've been through Weight Watchers like four or five times and lost the weight and gained it back and gone back to Weight Watchers with the belief that like this wasn't the program's fault. I just didn't do a good enough job of sticking to it. And you can tell yourself that once or twice or three times or four times. By the fifth time, it's like, maybe it is the program. Hmm. And then you start following the money. And then you start saying, you know, perhaps it is to their benefit that I keep failing at this and coming back and thinking it wasn't them, it was me. I just screwed it up and I'm going to do it better this time because now they're not counting points. They're counting carbs, or now they're not counting carbs. They're now vegetables or free foods, or, you know, they tweak the program enough so that you believe this time it's going to work for you. And I don't want to single out Weight Watchers. I mean, I think that there is a vast, vast, vast diet, exercise, plastic surgery industry that is making a fortune out of women feeling unhappy. And I just sort of decided, like, to what extent do I want to be complicit in this system? And to what extent do I have better things to do with my time? So I always exercised. I mean, like, at my heaviest, I exercised. And I always, you know, for mental health, for physical health, so I just feel good about what my body could do. But I just kind of gave up on the idea because, like, whatever I did, there's a weight that my body would just always want to get back to. And I'm like, okay, that's it. Like, do I want to fight this? Do I want to spend my life fighting this? Or do I just want to, like, say, okay, it is what it is, and let's move on?
You wrote about being hungry. I mean, that even having a meal, you still felt hungry. And yeah. I think for people that don't have that feeling, it's and being hungry, you want to eat.
Yeah.
But that seemed to be something that was certainly a lot of your childhood.
It was so interesting. Like, I would watch my sister. My sister's 15 months younger than I am, and we'd get like the same plate of food for dinner, and she'd like, you know, eat half, push it away, be done. And I would stare at her. How can you be done with that? How are you leaving food? Are you going to eat that? Can I eat that? Like, and I remember reading Stephen King's book about writing, where he talks about alcoholism and being in a restaurant and watching somebody with a single glass of wine and just toying with it all night, like, you know, and then drinking it, putting it down, drinking, leaving half of it, you know, getting up from the table. And Stephen King describing that bewilderment of how can you leave that there? I think that, like, people with weight issues, and, you know, again, I think there's some science to this, like, it's like you don't have the same off switch that other people do. Like, my sister can, like, take food or leave it. And for me, it's like I can take food and take it and then take more. And I, you know, and it's just been a question of, like, how much do I want to fight that?
That's Jennifer Weiner, our guest today on Radio Times. As I said, she's been a guest many times in the past, author of more than 10 books, including Good in Bed, In Her Shoes, most recently a book called The Next Best Thing. Mm-hmm. And many of her characters, a number of her lead characters, have been larger women.
Full-figured
women.
You know, which was very deliberate because, you know, the books I read as a kid, you know, I would read, like, Judith Krantz's, you know, Princess Daisy and Scruples. And I loved those books. I love them, love them, love them. But, like, no one was ever, like, fat was the worst thing you could be. And it was always, like, if you ever came across a fat character, you could bet that character was evil. Like, that was a villain. It was sort of shorthand for villainy. And I wanted to write a book like that maybe like a 13 or 14 or 15 year old girl could pick up and be like, wow, like this woman sounds like me. Like, you know, when she's talking about like her thighs rubbing together under her skirt, that I felt that. And, you know, talking about like being the biggest woman in the gym in the exercise class, or like going to Lululemon and they don't have your size or whatever it's going to be. Like, I wanted to write a story for that girl and like have her feel not so alone.
Well, let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. If this sounds like you, we want to hear from you. Let me see what Carol from Philadelphia has to say. Carol, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Jennifer. It's such a joy to speak with you. I'm a huge fan of your book. You're welcome. I love that you write women so honestly and relatably, and I love your sense of humor. You mentioned earlier that, you know, we tend to show the best versions of ourselves on social media or even just sharing, you know, the good stories about ourselves with our friends. And I've noticed in my relationships with my female friends, there's a high degree of competitiveness among each other and, oh, my baby's better than yours because he sleeps at night already and, and, you know, I've already lost my baby weight and, you know, that sort of stuff. And I just feel like we've reached a point where we're afraid to be authentic with each other. And I was just wondering what you think it would take in order for women to break down those barriers and really, you know, trust each other and be honest and true to themselves in their relationship with each other so that we can grow and actually have, you know, some real women sharing real stories with each other in their real lives and not have the Real Housewives of, you know,
Philadelphia. Whatever.
Exactly. That's a
Carol,
great,
thanks for the call. Go
that's
ahead.
That's a great, great question because I think that, like, Facebook should not be a place where you go to torture yourself, like where you're sort of flicking through other people's status updates and feeling like crap. And I think too often that's what it is. And I think that Carol's absolutely right about, like, you know, oh, my baby is sleeping through the night. I've lost the baby weight. You know, my kid is reading already. A friend of mine once described that question of, like, you know, is your kid reading? It's like the kindergarten equivalent of, like, how much do you bench? But here's the thing. Like, I think the answer is real simple and real difficult. I think it's like we just have to get honest. And I think that we just, you know, people show pictures with the little hashtag no filter to say, like, this image hasn't been retouched and I haven't, like, futzed with it. Like, I think that there has to be a little bit of no filter life out there. And I think that so many women, it's like, well, let me do that when I've lost 10 pounds, or let me do that after I get my roots touched up, or whatever. Let me do that whenever thing happens that will make me look more acceptable. And to use an example from my own life, like, over the summer, the New York Times asked me if I would be part of the What I Wore thing feature in the style section, where basically normally they talk to, like, some actress or fancy thin person, and it's like you have to keep a diary of everything you wear for a week.
Yes.
And my first reaction is, like, why do you want me to talk about my clothes? Like, I am the worst dressed person. Like, I just don't care. Like, there are women who use clothing as a medium with which to express their own creativity and view of the world. And I tend to regard clothes as something that basically keep me from being naked. Like, that's it. That's all they
do.
They're
utilitarian.
They're
right?
Utilitarian. The woman, the editor is like, how would you describe your style? And I'm like, washable? I don't know. But I'm like, I didn't want to do it. I'm like, this is, you know, and they never talk about my books, and now they want to talk about my clothes, and this is ridiculous, and this is sexist, and I'm not going to be complicit in this double standard. And then I'm like, but what if somebody opens the paper on Sunday and sees me instead of Natalie Portman? I love Natalie Portman, but Natalie Portman is gorgeous and tiny and looks the way women are quote unquote supposed to look. And so I'm like, okay, what if it was, like, you know, size 16 me? And I'm like, that could be useful. That could help somebody. That could maybe make somebody else feel like a little less of a freak, because you don't see people who look like me unless we're, like, the before on The Biggest Loser, you know, which is a show I have, like, so many problems with. We could talk for a whole nother hour about, like, that whole situation of plus-size people as visual punchlines on television and the sort of minstrel show aspect of showing overweight people exercising till they vomit. And, like, there's, you know, and the idea that, like, you are fat, you must be punished, and there's no happiness possible for you unless you get thin. All of those messages.
A shaming technique.
Shaming, exactly. And I'm like, you know what? Like, let them take my picture and let them put it in the paper and let me write about, like, my Nike flip-flops and my Old Navy tank top. And somebody's going to read this and feel
like the tiniest bit better about herself, and then I'll have done my job in the world.
Carol, thanks for the call to Radio Times. But I think there's a flip side of the competition, which is, and perhaps you have to be older like I am, getting together with women my age and complaining about what's happening to our bodies.
Oh.
And in fact, I've sort of put a moratorium on my friends, which is like, we cannot talk about our lines and our sags and what's drooping and where things used to be. We just cannot do
that
anymore.
I would just like to say, we are on the radio, but Marty, you look terrific. I need to say that. But I mean,
that's why I'm on the radio.
But it's interesting. I mean, like, that's become, that is our common cause these days, or like that's the common ground. It's never good enough, no matter who you are, how old you are, where you are in your life. And maybe some of that's just human nature. Like, I think that women, not just with people, like you want to see how you're doing. You want that yardstick. You want to see how that other baby's doing. And is it rolling over yet? And is it sitting up yet? And is it feeding itself yet? And there's something, you know, I'm not going to try to like undo like years and years and years of evolution. Like, probably we all compete for a reason, and it has to do with Darwin and all that stuff. But like, just if everybody could just like be a tiny, tiny bit kinder to themselves and everybody else, like on social media, in person. Like, when I'm with my daughters, like, I try to like notice people who look different and say, like, isn't that cool? Like, look at her hair. Like, isn't that great? Or like, you know, look at those like giant earrings that, you know, whatever it is, like, just try to say like, there's difference out there, and that's great.
Let me see what Vicky from Plymouth Meeting has to say. Vicky, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Hi, Vicky. Do we have Vicky?
We've lost Vicky.
We seem to have
Hi.
Lost.
Sorry about that.
That's okay, Vicky. Anyway. Go ahead.
I like the show, and I'm a very big fan of your work, Jennifer. Thanks so much for this show. I'm a nurse, and I have been an overweight person. I've been clinically obese. I've been successful at Weight Watchers.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So I just get a little concerned when we throw around the words obese and overweight as if they are the same word as fat or unattractive. I'm still not a very small person, and I'm interested in making women feel happy with how they look and how they live and how they are. But I'm also very, you know, experienced in having most of my patient population be difficult to find a vein in because they're covered with, you know, extra adipose tissue, and counseling them about diabetes at younger and younger ages, and working with their increased risk of cancer. So whenever I hear about fat acceptance, I want to think about also the risks associated with that, the health risks associated with that.
Vicky, that's a great comment. And I'd be curious about your comment.
Well, I think, I mean, there are people who genuinely care about the health of fat people with obesity. I think also there are people that use that as sort of a convenient excuse to shame fat people, which we know embarrassing people about how they look does not get them eating any healthier. It does not get them to the gym. It does not change their lives. It just, it sort of turns up the volume on the feedback loop of, I look terrible, nothing's going to change it, might as well give up. And I think that Vicky's raising great, great questions, because I want healthy kids. I don't want to be diabetic. I don't want my kids being diabetic. And the question is, okay, how do we separate health from appearance? How do we send the message of, you know, exercise is great and everyone needs to be doing it, big, little, in between?
I want to pick up on that after this very short break. That's Jennifer Weiner, our guest today on Radio Time. She's the keynote speaker tomorrow at the Renfrew Center Foundation's Eating Disorder Conference. Renfrew, a residential facility in the Philadelphia region. Stay with us. Call us 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Natural Lands Trust supports WHYY and invites you to find yourself outside. With 42 nature preserves spanning eastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey, Natural Lands Trust is a getaway to nature. To learn more about preserves, upcoming events, and how your support can help save open space, natlands.org. That's natlands.org. Natural Lands Trust. Land for life.
Lost and Found. the idea of these extraordinary works stashed in this one room with rotting food and old cans is just very, very hard to believe.
A Nazi crime and a granddaughter's quest to get her hands on the Degas that used to hang on her art dealer grandpa's wall. Next time on The Takeaway from Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Widener University supports WHYY. Widener's physical therapy program provides students with real-world experience in their student-led physical therapy clinic. Like all Widener graduate programs, the physical therapy program combines challenging and engaging classroom work with practical, applied learning. Learn more on how Widener's physical therapy program can help your career at widener.edu/PT. Again, that's widener.edu/PT. Widener Leadership Works.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, so ask any teenage girl or grown woman, for that matter, about whether they like their body, and chances are the answer is no. Jennifer Weiner, our guest, has written best-selling novels that have featured plus-size characters who have struggled with their self-esteem. It's something Weiner has dealt with in her own life. She's also been thinking about body image as the mother of two young daughters, dealing with the barrage of messages from media, the social media, about being thin and beautiful. It's our topic for this hour of Radio Times, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Our caller before the break, I think they'll raise some interesting questions about the issues of health, the issues of appearance, how thin is too thin, how heavy is too heavy.
Well, there's a movement called Health in Any Size that basically says that we want to sort of separate aesthetics from health, and we want to concentrate on people exercising and eating well, whether they're 100 pounds or 400 pounds. And it's interesting because I think that anytime there's sort of somebody out there saying, you know what, like I'm big and I'm okay with it, there are people that are saying that's not healthy. And I remember the last round of this was when Gabourey Sidibe, who was the star of Precious and is now on American Gothic on TV, like whenever she shows up in the media and she's a larger woman and everybody's like, oh my God, she's going to drop dead, you know, and watching that, like Vicky's a nurse, and I think like there's genuine like concern and awareness of like what it is to work in a doctor's office and what it is to have to talk to people about diabetes at younger ages. But then it's like none of us are Gabby Sidibe's doctor. Okay, we do not know how her blood pressure is. We don't know how her cholesterol is. And I remember when Amy Winehouse died, you know, thinking I bet her BMI was terrific. You know, it's like there are so many other things that women do to put themselves at risk. And yet the only or one of the only things that we feel comfortable critiquing, and probably because it's just so obvious, it's like you can't look at somebody and know, do they smoke? Are they getting enough sleep? Are they eating anything? Are they eating healthy? Do they get any exercise? Do they wear their seatbelt in the car? We can't look at anyone and know that, but we can look at somebody and say, ooh, big, you know.
Because there it is.
Probably going to drop dead. Right.
Let me see what Linda from Princeton has to say. Linda, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
First of all, I love this topic. I'm a big fan of your books.
Thank you.
When
have a lot
I read
of fans
Good and Bad,
there.
It was like an epiphany for me. Like, it really made me feel like, oh, there's other people out there.
Yes.
But when they cast In Her Shoes, I remember being horrifically disappointed. Like, I truly felt betrayed by that casting because I love Toni Collette, but Toni Collette is a small woman.
Okay. She had gained a lot of weight for Muriel's Wedding. This is my, because believe me, I went through this as well. She had gained a lot of weight for a movie. I was under the impression that she was going to do that again. And I knew that they needed sort of a name actress. Like, they couldn't really cast an unknown, which I think would have been my preference, to just find someone the right size for the role. And what happened was, you know, and I was getting like calls from LA where they were shooting, and they're like, okay, she's gained 10 pounds, she's gained 12 pounds, she's gained 15 pounds. I'm like, guys, like, that's a good weekend for some of us. Like, let's step it up here a little bit. And then they're like, I will never forget this. They're like, she's kind of hit a wall. And
she
I was
can't
like,
gain anymore?
I can't gain any. She's hit a wall. I'm like, there's a wall? Like, I have not discovered this wall. Where is the wall? I'm like, do you need me to come out there with some Krispy Kremes? Like, what? I mean, and that was, I think I was probably just as heartbroken, if not more, because I wanted her, I wanted it to be a big girl, and she wasn't.
Right.
And that's Hollywood for you. I mean, and I remember when I was out there trying to do a television show in 2010 for ABC Family, I had written with Jeff Greenstein, who was a Will and Grace writer and a Friends writer. We'd written this show about a girl, like a great big, gorgeous, curvy girl who feels fantastic about herself and is going to change the world and not let the world change her. And they cast Raven Simone, who had lost like a ton of weight. And I'm looking at her and I'm like, she's thin. And they're like, oh, no, she's not thin. Like, she's, you know, you might be looking at her. She's like Philadelphia thin, but she's not Hollywood thin. And I'm like, guys, like, thin is thin.
Is that a quote there?
That's a quote. Oh, like, wow. She's thin. And they were like, no, she's not. And like, it just turned out to be like, it turned into like this sort of awful thing. We had to pad her. And like, she wasn't interested in playing the big girl. And it was just, you know, it was sort of a typical Hollywood heartbreak. But it's, you know, if anything ever happens again, if one of my books gets turned into a movie, if I ever write another TV show, like, the good news is there's many more options. There's more places you can do TV. There's cable. There's Netflix. There's, you know, there's YouTube. And I'd love to actually see one of my books or see something I wrote come to the screen the way I'd intended it. And I'm working for that day. That's all I can tell you.
Linda, does that satisfy your question?
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. Let me see what Amy from Ewing, New Jersey has to say. Amy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi
first
there.
Of all, I really appreciate the show today. I think that body acceptance is extremely, extremely important. I work with very young children. I'm an educator with them, and I am also a yoga teacher on the side. And I have to tell you that feeling comfortable in someone's, in your own skin, is half the battle. I mean, of course we should all exercise and do our best to eat well and adopt healthy habits, but training our next generation on that body acceptance is absolutely the key. So I really appreciate what Jennifer is doing, and this lack of self-esteem that comes with trying to compare ourselves with the perfect Philadelphia thin or Hollywood thin or whatever. Thin looks different on different people. Fit looks different on different people.
That's
Look at Olympic athletes aren't, you know, Philadelphia thin. They're fit in ways that can compete that's perfect for them, for their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to hear a little bit more about what Jennifer and maybe what Marty, what are we doing to help our next generation of kids to help adopt these athletic identities that help them move forward as healthy adults?
That's a fair question, Amy. Thanks for the call. Go ahead, Jennifer.
I signed up for a sprint triathlon.
Whoa.
Yeah, I did my first one in 2009. And a sprint triathlon, for those who don't know, is you swim a quarter of a mile and you bike anywhere from 10 to 12 miles and then you run a 5K. So I'm a good swimmer. Like, I've been swimming my whole life. I'm a pretty decent biker. I am a very slow runner. I'm just not fast. So,
But
I run. And I made sure that my daughters were seeing me do this and that I was telling them, but also showing them that you don't need to be teeny tiny to like lace up your sneakers or put on your bike helmet or put on your bathing suit and do it. And I remember, at the end of this race, like, I've done like a bunch more of them since then, and I've like done some other like running races. Like, I finished this race. My daughter like meets me at the finish line. She's like cheering for me. She's all excited. And then she's like, "Mom, did you win?" And I'm like, "Not so much." But then I'm like, "You know what? Like,
I did.
I said I'm not racing against anyone but myself. I'm not trying to like win this thing. All I'm trying to do is like I had a time in mind, and I wanted to do better than that, and I did. And I said, but you know what, Lucy? Like, the person who wins is the person who gets out and does it. Like, I beat everyone who's still on their couch right now. So, but it's like, that's all we can do. I mean, I think that we can, like, preach. We can get up on our soapboxes. We can talk about acceptance and self-esteem and its importance. But, like, if we're not out there modeling
the beliefs that we want to see enacted, if we're not out there, you know, being the change that we want to see in the world, like, it's all just talk. And kids know that. They can smell talk. Like, they know when you're just, like, spouting a line and not really believing it and not really living it. So for me, it's like I exercise, and my daughters see that. And, like, I've taught them. They both are great swimmers. My daughter's in this club called You Go Girl at her school, which I know. It's a running club. It's like, but, you know, they run and they talk, like, in very, like, non-preachy ways about body image and self-acceptance and self-esteem and feeling good and developing good habits. And, like, that's what I want. And, and getting back to what Vicky was saying about, like, health issues, it's like, I don't think top down works. I don't think lecturing kids about, like, you don't make fun of other children because they look a different way and you eat your vegetables. Like, I think it has to be more organic and more ground up and more like kids believe what they see. They don't believe what they hear. They believe what they see you doing. So you got to do it.
Amy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. But I was also thinking, Jennifer, about, and we all know people that do not fit the image of beauty or thinness, but they have style, they have confidence, they have a kind of personality, they have a kind of presence. And it defies, I think, all the stereotypes. But, I mean, I can think of a handful of people that fit that picture.
Right. And I know those women, too, and I make sure my daughters see them. And I don't want them believing that worth or power or desirability or any of that resides solely in a dress size.
Right.
So, like, you know, my mom was a great role model for me and has been a great role model for my daughters. And her partner has been, I think, a great role model for my daughters as somebody who, again, like, maybe doesn't fit the conventional definition of beauty, but, like, you know, has fun, like, puts on a bathing suit and goes digging for clams and has fun. And fun's important, too.
Fun is very important. Let me see what Anthony from Philadelphia has to say.
We
have two guys waiting up here. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yes. I was wondering what's your views on male anorectics and what they go through as one of your topics.
Yeah, I mean, boy, it used to be like this was just a girls' club. And sadly, I think that we're seeing more and more men sort of infected with the idea that, like, they're not thin enough either. And it is heartbreaking. And it's heartbreaking, like, you know, especially because the ideal of beauty, like, we talked at the top of the hour about how it's, like, it's becoming narrower and narrower where there's only one okay way to look. And now I think it's, like, guys, they worry about, like, their body hair. And they worry about, like, you know, the shape of their, you know, whatever, like, the silhouette of the season is. And do they fit that? And again, I think it's important to follow the money. I think it's important to look at who is profiting from male insecurity and all of these gyms and all of these supplements and all of these, you know, pieces of exercise equipment that they advertise on late night TV. Like, all of these things that tell you you're not good enough the way you are, but if you know, three easy installments of $39.99 and we'll fix you. You know, I think, again, you have to say, like, who is out there making money from the idea that I need fixing?
Anthony, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I am thinking, though, of Chris Christie as we talk. And I haven't seen the cover of Time magazine, but apparently the cover of Time magazine
is the elephant in the room.
Is a picture or a silhouette of him with the title Elephant in the Room.
I know.
And you could take it many different ways. But, you know, he has that outsized personality
that goes
with his outsized
He does.
Body.
But again, it's like the discussion. It's so interesting. Like, I don't think it mattered as much. Even 10 years ago or 20 years ago, like, a guy, it was all about, like, how much he was earning and what he was doing. Like, no one cared about, or no one cared that much, I think, about what a guy looked like. They could get away with much more and still can. Like, you turn into any sitcom and it's sort of like Kevin James and the hot girl. It's sort of guys can be a little rounder, a little dumpier, and they, you know, they're still with the supermodel and it's still ridiculous. But now I do think that there's an increased sense that, like, you know, and again, it's couched in the language of health and obligation. Like, does Chris Christie have an obligation to be a better role model for children? Like, do we want, like, a fatso president, as I heard somebody say, you know? And it's like
something to think about.
Yeah.
Let me squeeze one more caller on.
We've got
Larry from Hatfield. Larry, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Okay. Hi, Jennifer, Marty.
Yeah.
I'm an RN, like Vicky. Vicky brought up a lot of pertinent questions. Also, there's some other things, though, about carb craving that might be gene related.
Right.
And that's why some people are heavy. I mean, I could go and have alcohol or have some kind of carb, and I'll go to the carbs, forget the alcohol. But one of the other things is the competition among women, because women are dressing for
each other
Indeed. And not dressing for men. Men are just happy that women are there and women are paying attention to them. And if you turn it around the other way, women are more acceptable of men being round. It's not that pertinent to what their goal is. It's what women are doing against each other.
Absolutely. And Larry, women size each other up all the time. Go ahead, Jennifer.
No, it's true. And it's, again, like the question of, like, how do we fix this? And I wish I knew the answers. I wish, you know, because I have daughters, I wish that I could, like, give them a shot and sort of inoculate them against this competitiveness and against the cattiness and against the sort of sizing each other up and looking across the room and, like, am I thinner than she is? And, you know, did her shoes cost more? And who made her bag? And all that stuff. And there's no magic bullet, but I think the more that we're aware, the more that we're paying attention, and the more that we're asking, who's trying to sell me something here? When we consume media, when we're looking at a magazine, when we're watching a TV show, when we're seeing a model, when we're hearing a message, who's trying to sell me something here? Who's making money off of this? I think that that's, like, a good question to start with, always.
Are you working on another book?
I am working on it. Of course, I'm always.
Why am I not surprised?
Never. No, I'm working on a book called All Fall Down about an overwhelmed working mother.
I wonder where that.
I wonder where that comes from. Right. You know, a woman whose life is falling apart, and she sort of is dealing with aging parents and a very difficult child, and painkillers, painkiller addiction.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Right? Didn't see that coming, did you?
Been in the news.
Little curveball there. Yeah, no, again, huge, huge problem. And I think perhaps not unrelated to everything we've been talking about. I think that women feel so much pressure to do it all and look good while they're doing it. And there's, you know, lovely narcotics to sort of help you get through it.
Jennifer Weiner, thank you so much.
On that happy note, thanks.
Yes, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. This note, she's the keynote speaker tomorrow at the Renfrew Center Foundation's Eating Disorder Conference, and her most recent book, a novel called The Next Best Thing. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for those phone calls, and do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.